Welcome to the short audio tour of the Barber Coin Gallery exhibition, The Last Roman, Peasant to Emperor. This 20-minute tour will take you around the entire gallery, briefly outlining each case and narrating the life of the Emperor Justinian. Each case has a longer, more in-depth audio guide with words from Justinian's contemporaries, which you can also download from the Barber's website to your mobile device, or skip track if using the MP3 player provided. The numbers for each case's guide can be found located at the top of each case. Our short tour begins with the case to your left as you enter the gallery, entitled The Early Years, around 482 to 532 AD. Sometime around 482, a baby boy was born to Sabatius and Vigilantia. He was named Petrus Sabatius and began life as a low-born child in a Latin-speaking part of the largely Greek-speaking Eastern Roman Empire. Little is known about Petrus Sabatius's formative years, but we know that he was a favourite of his uncle, Justin, the brother of Vigilantia. Justin was also born into provincial obscurity, but had joined the Roman army and eventually worked his way up to the palace guard. The old emperor, Anastasius I, had come to power by marrying Ariadne, the eldest daughter of the Emperor Leo I, mother of the Emperor Leo II, and widow of the Emperor Zeno. The family tree in the case shows the connections between the emperors during the time of Justinian's rise through the ranks. Anastasius had no children of his own, and some in the capital anticipated that the throne would pass to one of Anastasius's nephews. Instead, it passed to Justin. Justin became emperor of the Romans in 518. He brought his young nephew, Petrus Sabatius, to the imperial palace in Constantinople and adopted him as a son. In honour of Justin, Petrus Sabatius took the name Iustinianus, Justinian, meaning the little Justin. In 527, Justinian became co-emperor alongside his uncle, who died later the same year. They issued coins in both their names, like the example you can see in the case. Thus the peasant boy became emperor and set about ruling the Eastern Roman Empire. The first years of Justinian's reign were relatively quiet. But in 532, the chariot racing factions, the Blues and the Greens, stopped fighting each other, joined forces, and together began a rebellion with the chant Nika, meaning victory in Greek. Our main writer of the period, Procopius of Caesarea, gives us a rather colourful description of the chariot faction lists from which we've derived the artist's impression in the bottom left of this case. You can hear the full description on the extended audio tour for Case 1. Justinian's story continues now with the large case to your right, entitled The Mediterranean World at Justinian's Accession in 527 AD. The map in this case shows the Mediterranean world as it was when Justinian came to the throne in 527. Rome had long been an enemy of the Sasanian-Persian Empire in the east, and relations had not improved by 527. Until 531, Justinian's empire fought a bloody war with the Persian Shah Anshar Kavad I. But when Kavad died, he was succeeded by his son Khusrau I, who, having to deal with internal problems, signed a so-called eternal peace with Justinian, and this left Justinian able to turn his attentions westward. Over a century earlier, in 395, the Emperor Theodosius I died. He split the Roman Empire between his two sons, Honorius in the west and Arcadius in the east. As the migrations of Goths, Vandals, Huns, and other groups reached the borders of Rome, the west in particular began to crumble. Eventually, these groups set up their own kingdoms in former Roman lands. Justinian, having signed peace with the Persians and suppressed the Nika revolt in 532, now turned his attention to reuniting the Roman Empire. The Vandals had set up a kingdom in North Africa, with its capital at Carthage in 435. It was to rich, fertile North Africa that Justinian first turned his attention. He sent the general Belisarius, who had led the suppression of the Nika revolt, with a small force to invade the Vandal kingdom, which surrendered by 534. Then Justinian turned his attention to Italy, containing the old imperial city of Rome itself. The Ostrogoths had set up a kingdom in Italy under their Roman-educated king Theodoric, who ruled Italy from his capital in Ravenna with Roman consent. When Theodoric died in 526, civil strife broke out amongst the Ostrogoths over how close ties to the Romans their kingdom should have. The execution of Theodoric's pro-Roman daughter, Amalasuntha, in 535 was all the pretext Justinian needed for another invasion led by Belisarius. Ravenna was captured in 540, but the Ostrogoths put up a second defence, which was ended in favour of the Romans only in 553. Near to the end of the second phase of the Ostrogothic War, Justinian also turned his attention to the Visigoths in Spain. The Visigoths had settled in Roman Spain after marching westwards during the 5th century. Unlike the Vandals and Ostrogoths, however, the Visigothic kingdom was not extinguished by Justinian's campaigns, which in Spain took place between 552 and 555. To consider what happened in the newly expanded empire, we now turn to the case to your left, entitled The Mediterranean World at Justinian's Death in 565 AD. When Justinian died, aged 83, in 565, he had managed to reunite much of the former Western Roman Empire with the East. This map shows the reunited empire and considers seven cities, their status as mints, and their position in Justinian's building programme. Constantinople was the capital and primary mint of the empire, whose most notable redevelopment was the rebuilding of the Hagia Sophia on a grand scale by which we know the cathedral today. Alexandria was the main city of Egypt, which produced coins to suit the needs of its local economy and was not far from the pilgrimage site of St. Catherine at Sinai, which was redeveloped under Justinian. Antioch was the capital of the province of Syria and was largely destroyed by an earthquake in 526, but was rebuilt by Justinian and renamed Theopolis, the city of God, which is reflected in the mint mark on their coins. Rather than renovation under Justinian, the city of Athens experienced the closure of its famous academy, established by Plato and schooled to the likes of Aristotle and Cicero. It is the only city on the map not to have struck coins. Carthage was the old capital of the Vandal kingdom, which became economically important to the East Romans and experienced much renovation, acquiring new churches and public baths. Its mint produced more silver coin than anywhere else in the empire outside of Constantinople. Rome, the former imperial capital, had been losing its importance since the 4th century, but continued as a mint and did experience some restoration under Justinian. And Ravenna, the former capital of the Ostrogothic kingdom, which continued as a mint and acquired new churches under Justinian, most notably San Vitale, which was actually begun by the Ostrogoths, but completed by Justinian. The mosaics pictured on the banners in the alcove to your right come from the church of San Vitale. Justinian's achievements did not end with conquest and architectural development, however, and we now turn to his economic reforms in the case behind you, entitled Reforming the Economy. This case shows the state of the Roman coinage leading up to Justinian's reign and what Justinian then did with the coinage. On the left-hand side of the case, you can see three examples of gold coins. During the Roman Republic, gold coins were extremely scarce. The first coin in the row would not have been a standard part of the Republican economy. Moving to the imperial period, gold aurei became more common, but they were still largely commemorative, marking events such as the conquest of Britannia under the Emperor Claudius in 43 AD. This is what is celebrated on the second gold coin in the row. By the 6th century, however, the gold solidus was the mainstay of the East Roman economy. This is the third coin in the row. By contrast, the mainstay of the Roman Republican and early imperial economy had been the silver denarius. You can see examples of a Republican and an Augustan denarius at the centre of the case as the first and second coins in the top row. With the introduction of the Antoninianus under the Emperor Caracalla in 215 AD and its subsequent debasement through the 3rd century, the silver coins became of decreasing importance. This progression is shown through the 3rd, 4th and 5th coins in this section. By Justinian's reign, the silver siliqua, as it was now known, was almost as scarce as the gold Republican coins had once been. The final coin in this section is an example of a siliqua. At the bottom of the left-hand side of the case, you can see two rows of four base metal coins. These coins were what the majority of the population would have handled. In the early empire, represented here by four coins of Nero who ruled in the 1st century AD, the value of the coins bore a relation to their size, weight, and metallic content. By contrast, the coins of Anastasius I, who ruled shortly before Justinian, had only token value. That is to say that, like our coins, they were only worth the value stamped on them. From left to right, the M or Mi means 40 numi, the K or Kappa means 20 numi, the I or Iota means 10 numi, and the E or Epsilon means 5 numi. These letters are Greek numerals. This is much in the same way that we have 50 pence, 20 pence, 10 pence, etc. The right-hand side of the case shows what Justinian did with his coinage. While he retained the system of token coinage used by Anastasius I, Justinian's base metal coins, changed in 538 AD, also bore a relation to each other in terms of size. The difference in size between the pre- and post-reform coins is clear to see. Justinian also introduced a dating system, which dated the coins in Roman numerals by the years of the emperor's reign. This is because where the population was Greek-speaking and needed to understand the value marks, the administration operated in Latin and needed to understand where and when any faulty coins might be coming from. These coin reforms also encompass iconography, and this is demonstrated by the bottom row of coins on the right-hand side. The new frontal bust of the emperor was much more Christianized than the older style, and was uniform across both gold and base metal coins. We will consider the iconography in greater detail at the end of this tour. We will now turn our attention to his legal reforms with the table case to your left in the alcove space containing the manuscript. Roman law was set by precedents, rather than prescribed, so it needed codification once every so often to collect all of the different cases together. This had been done a century before Justinian by the Emperor Theodosius II in the first half of the 5th century. What Justinian produced, however, was more expansive and in three parts: the Institutes, the Digest, and the Codex. It is the Codex that is displayed here. Though the text of the Codex on display is originally 6th century Constantinopolitan in composition, the manuscript itself is 13th century Italian or Southern French. This is because texts, especially important texts such as the Codex Justinianus, were copied by hand at later dates. Ancient and late antique texts are often known through later medieval manuscript versions like this one. This particular manuscript is normally held at Lichfield Cathedral. The Codex Iustinianus was so widely copied because it formed the basis of much medieval European laws, and even some modern European laws too. In this manuscript, you can also see annotations made in the Middle Ages, some of which are as late as the 16th century. On the backdrops behind this case are mosaics of three people. At the centre is Justinian. To the left is Justinian's wife, Theodora. And to the right is Belisarius, one of the principal generals of Justinian's reconquests and the last man who was not also an emperor to receive a Roman triumph for his military exploits. These mosaics are from the Church of San Vitale in Ravenna. It is probably the most famous image of Justinian. As you turn to your right to leave the gallery, let us look at the case opposite the case where we began to consider Justinian's legacy. After his death in 565, Justinian would come to be known as Justinian the Great and even became an Orthodox saint, largely for his role in convening the Fifth Ecumenical Council, setting church law. He has also been dubbed the Last Roman Emperor or the Last of the Romans in modern times, a title that is also sometimes applied to his general, Belisarius. This is because Justinian is sometimes considered to be the last Roman emperor to embody so-called true Roman ideals. While today Justinian might be best remembered for his territorial reconquests, in Constantinople later into the Middle Ages, he was better remembered as the creator of the Hagia Sophia. In the 10th century mosaic shown here, Justinian, to the left, presents the church to the Theotokos and Christ Child, while Constantine I, to the right, presents the city of Constantinople. Perhaps the most striking example of Justinian's enduring appeal to later East Romans can be seen through the life and times of Constantine IV. Constantine was emperor from 668 to 685. Just as when Justinian I had taken the throne, many of the empire's lands in the west had fallen to non-Roman groups, when Constantine IV came to power, many of the empire's eastern lands had fallen to the newly emerging Islamic Caliphate. Constantine himself, his father, and his grandfather had all been named Constantine and in some way referred to as the new Constantine, evoking the days of Constantine I. Constantine IV instead turned his attention to Justinian I, who had reclaimed lands from the so-called barbarians, just as Constantine intended to reclaim lands from the Caliph. Constantine began to style himself like Justinian I on his coins, which visually contrasted with those of the rest of the 7th century, and even increased the size of his base metal coins to be of the same size as those of Justinian, which were significantly larger than the base metal coins of the rest of the 7th century. You can see examples of these coins in the case. Constantine then named his son Justinian, who would go on to become Justinian II. Constantine also had a mosaic of himself placed in a church in Ravenna, in Santa Polinare in Classe, near to Justinian's mosaic in San Vitale, and in a very similar style too. This is the mosaic shown in the bottom right corner. In the face of the losses the empire suffered at the hands of the Caliphate, Constantine IV seemed to believe that what the empire needed to save it was nothing less than a new Justinian. As you leave the gallery, you will see the two small cases either side of the doorway. These are the final cases of the exhibition. The case to your right shows all the aspects of the obverse of a reformed gold solidus of Justinian. The emperor faces out, wearing a crested helmet, a cuirass or breastplate, and carrying a shield on his left shoulder. These military aspects of the emperor's appearance are traditional, but ironic, since Justinian never actually fought in battle. The curls under his helmet represent his hair, while the strings dangling down from this are the strings of pearls known as pendelia, which can also be seen in the mosaic of Justinian on the central backdrop banner in the gallery. In his left hand, Justinian holds a globus cruciger. This is a symbol of power Justinian himself introduced, and was used on statuary as well as coins. The orb was a standard Roman motif, but by placing a cross above it, it was meant to represent the Christian world over which the emperor held theoretical sway. In the case to the left of the doorway, you can see the reverse of one of these types of coins. At the centre is a winged figure, traditionally Victoria, the Roman goddess of victory, but sometimes interpreted as an angel. The inscription still marks her out as Victoria. In her right hand, she holds another globus cruciger, and in her left hand, she holds a staff surmounted by a chiro. The chiro was the monogram for Christ, formed by the first letters of his name in Greek, the chi and the rho, from Christos. In early Christianity, this symbol was much more commonly used than the cross. But the 5th and 6th centuries were when the cross increased in importance and the chiro decreased in importance. This concludes the main narrative of this exhibition. We hope you have found this exhibition interesting and informative. As this is the first time the Barber has used an audio tour, we would very much like to hear your thoughts about it. Please either follow instructions on the webpage you downloaded the tour from, or complete a provided feedback sheet when you return the provided MP3 player to a member of security staff at the end of the Red Gallery. Thank you, and goodbye.